That's People People by the Soul Jazz Orchestra from their 2008 album, Manifesto. Soul Jazz is a Canadian group deep in the heart of Ottawa. They do what I call message music, political music, blending soul and jazz and funk and Afrobeat and Latin musical styles. The band has six members, but they sound like it's a whole bigger group than that. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, November the 4th, Selection Day. And the question is, after the charade, what are we going to do? Now, selection, why did I use that word when, of course, it's Election Day? I use the word to make a distinction between election and selection. Politically, we have been conditioned to accept the latter. Actually, it is about two parties, the duopoly, Republicans and Democrats, selecting for the people who should be elected. So that at the very base of this idea of democracy, we have a distortion of it. We don't get to select anybody. That process is done behind closed doors, in a process that we don't get any input in. And out of that process, which involves a whole bunch of things that we really don't want to talk about, the corruption, essentially, the things that people do to get the favor of the party structure so that they can run under the party's banner. A lot of things go on behind closed doors for people to be selected by the party for election. And so when we show up at the polls, as America will do today, the electorate will do today, we really are not electing people as such. We are electing the selected people. That's the first fundamental problem with this whole idea of the exercise of your democratic rights. Fundamentally, it is undemocratic. It's like a sale, like Macy's announcing a big sale. Well, of course, there's a lot that goes into conditioning us to accept that this is actually a sale. Big things are going on. But in the mind of the store, there are lots of things that go into this business of having a big sale. First, of course, they have to condition consumers to actually believe that this is a great sale, that they're getting a big bargain. But, of course, from the store's point of view, they have some matter-of-fact issues to deal with. They've got an overload of inventory, maybe sales are slow all the rest of the year, and they have to create special events to energize their revenues. They've got perhaps too many of a particular thing on hand, and they got to get rid of those. Perhaps they're taking a look at what the buying patterns are among their customers, and they believe, well, they seem to be buying a lot of shoes, so we will put somewhere in there, we'll put shoes on sale. And they seem to be buying a lot of ties, so we'll have a lot of ties on sale. But in the middle of all of that, they will shove at you things that you may not particularly want to buy, but they'll make it attractive because it's all part of the bundle. So between the shoes on sale and between the ties on sale, you'll have a refrigerator. You'll have a big ticket item. You'll have the latest television on sale. you'll have the latest stove on sale. That's how it works. So you get a recipe that you think will have something for everybody. But the main thing is that what is driving the sale is a predictable return. The sales, by the time they actually occur, Macy's could pretty much predict how much profit it actually will make based on established buying patterns of customers and based on the effect and impact that advertising would have in shaping the customer's preferences. So you're hearing a great sale and you show up with your cash and your credit cards and you will be buying things that you really don't need because the emphasis is to play to the things that you want. Pretty much the same thing happens in politics. We're buying things that we really don't need, but they're selling what they think you want. And a lot of energy, hundreds of millions of dollars, are going into shaping your opinion and bringing you into their world so that you have a feeling that you are at one, you have the same vision as they do, that you want the same things they want. You have the same fears. You know, they tell you, well, if you don't vote for us, look what the other side would do. And the other side says exactly the same thing. And it is all predicated on the idea that you're an idiot. You have no independent way of deciding what's best for you, nor do you understand that that, in fact, is the basis on which you should vote. Not what's best for the Democrats or what's best for the Republicans. What's best for you? What's best for your community? If we were to apply that maxim to the business of voting, I think a lot of us would rethink our choices very, very carefully. And we would see even that we need to reject what is passing for democracy in this country. It is so beneath our standards. It is so alien to human progress. It is so wrong in many ways. We look at how we ought to measure democracy, and as I said, it has nothing to do with voting. Voting is just a method of installing systems of government at the local and state and national levels. That's all it is. Democracy has to do with the quality and frequency of access that you and I have to the strategic resources of our society. And that's, I think, a fair definition of democracy, irrespective of the type of government people say they have. Whether it's a communist government, a socialist government, whether it is a democratic socialist, whatever it is they choose to call themselves, you measure the quality of life by the degree of access people have to strategic resources within their respective societies. And if we apply that maxim again here in the United States, we will see a yawning gap between what is described as our ideal way of life and, in fact, the actual way we live. Do we have access to all these resources in our society as citizens? No. We see the arrogation of resources to 1%, and the rest of us are scrambling to see how best we can make ends meet. We see racial inequities that have become more and more entrenched. We see poverty, we see unemployment, and we see a sense of a kind of meanness now, an open kind of warfare against people who are deemed not to have the things that the 1% do have. The 99% are being targeted in all kinds of ways to support, in fact, the 1%. So today there will be, because there are hundreds of seats, you know, in the House and in the Senate and governors, those are the things that are of interest to the parties. Now, they may not be of interest to you, but we don't count. Right? It is of interest to the parties. This is what they are fighting for. Control at the state and local and national levels. Your agenda and my agenda may be entirely different. We may be interested in other things other than how many of which category we can rack up. But we factor into this charade because ostensibly the United States has to look at least to the rest of the world as a society that conforms to these high ideals of democracy. So it would appear that the people are voting for these things. The people are going to be voting for new senators and new governors and new legislators at the state and local levels. We have no part, however, in their selection. So the duopoly, no matter how it turns out, the duopoly will win. That's an absolute prediction. The Democratic-Republican duopoly will again win this election cycle because the contest essentially will be between them. And whether between them one side gets more seats and the other side does not, it doesn't matter. The fact is the standard political structure, which is the duopoly, the American duopoly, of the Republicans and the Democrats will prevail. That's the first fact we need to accept. And don't really get bogged down in the details of whether the Senate is now going to be Republican controlled, whether the Democrats would lose a hold in the Senate, and or whether they would gain in the House. These things are just mathematical formulae for how these parties operate. Has nothing to do with our benefits whatsoever. It has to do with the contest essentially between these two parties and the turf they intend to gather and snatch from each other. But they will win. Together, the duopoly, the Democratic-Republican duopoly, will win. And party statisticians will run the numbers a thousand different ways, and they will cull clues as to what they need to do to gain victory 2 years from now in the 2016 presidential election. That's what these parties are involved in. That's their concern. And we will have a couple of new faces in the trick deck that's already loaded with jokers. The tragedy is that third parties and many grassroots efforts will have little, if anything, to report in the way of victory at the end of the day. And that's where our discussion is going to go today. What are we going to do? I've been asking this question in different ways, but essentially that's the question. What are we going to do? This election cycle, one would think, would have been just about perfect for the emergence of a strong third-party challenge, strong grassroots movement. I mean strong, because the people are suffering so, and willing and open to other ideas that they think will work, that address their unique needs, that have in mind a rise of the people who have been waiting for so long for some kind of relief, but the political process is dead set against it. The duopoly, both the Republicans and Democrats absolutely agree that the needs of the people can be postponed as long as their political contests between the two of them, between the two parties, that's what is of priority. So why didn't we see this marked presence of a third party, credible alternative to this insanity that we've been tolerating for so long? There are all kinds of reasons, and really, you know, today, on a day like this, I'm not so much interested in what went wrong. I'm interested in why we aren't as excited as we ought to be about putting things right. Why are we tolerating repeated cycles of defeat? Why are we not moving on our interests? What impediments exist in getting this groundswell going, which is there? It is palpable. It is ready to receive a new message. The leadership of these movements, I know they have a huge challenge before them, but we've got to see some kind of a coordinated effort, some kind of at least one little victory. But you see, when we suffer repeated defeats, whether by commission or omission, whether we do things that basically defeat the purpose, or whether we don't do the things that serve the purpose, whether by omission or commission, the fact is we are racking up cycle after cycle repeated defeats. And that in itself is discouraging. It has an anesthetic effect. We have to see from these alternative parties and political movements, we have to begin to witness some consistency of success. Otherwise, we will, like anybody else, you turn off. You see it as an exercise in futility. The ideas are good. They, in fact, are very sound. The alternative view is very valid. But we don't see the connection being vigorous. We don't see the aggressive move into communities that are desperate for help. Well, one could say, well, that too is a problem, that the communities themselves are not making an effort. But we have to see and we have to look at things from a different point of view. When people are oppressed, truly oppressed, more often than not, their energy is in dealing with the here and now. Because the here and now is where they are. They don't have long-range vision. If the issue is whether they can eat for the day, they think these things are luxuries because they are literally at the point of battling for day-to-day survival. So we have to understand that. It is not their fault that we don't see long-range planning. They are literally in day-to-day battle, day-to-day struggle for the essentials of life. So an enlightened approach will be to consider that and to articulate a plan, to put together a method that considers the objective conditions within these communities that are under tremendous assault on so many levels, and to be creative about it, but to be consistent about it. But I have remarked here that we see a retreat, not an advance. We're seeing a retreat, and disturbingly, within that alternative movement, we are also seeing the emergence of race and class as impediments to progress. The people who potentially can provide answers and solutions, not answers, we have enough answers. What we don't have are solutions. And answers are and solutions are two different things. We need solutions. But the mechanisms that potentially have the greatest impact and the greatest chance of success are themselves mired in race and class issues. So they don't see it as a priority to organize the really, really, really distressed if their leadership comes from a different class orientation and sees that the struggles, the elemental struggles being experienced by the masses of people, are also people of the lower class. We have this problem. Whites have retreated in many ways in the alternative political world, even. They've retreated to the comfort zone where privileges still obtain, unwilling to roll up their sleeves and get into the muck and mire of political work. The African American community, the distressed African American community, literally has succumbed to a kind of to the plots against them. Which they're beaten. They're psychologically beaten. They're spent. Their will to resist is extremely low. Although we see in instances where the situation has become so egregious that you will have a fit and you will have a spurt of reaction, but it is not consistent. The energy, it takes energy to be consistent about resistance. And we have to take into consideration that a people so beaten up, it is almost inhumane to demand of them that they perform a superhuman feat and overcome years and years and years of psychological damage. in the snap of a finger. You have to accept these realities in working with these communities. So, where are we going to go? And what are we going to do? Since we are supposedly educated about the reality of political life in the United States, since we supposedly have a bit of knowledge about how things work and, more importantly, how things are not working and why and what we can do about them, why have we allowed yet another election cycle to come and go as of this evening without showing that we have attained some quantifiable success? This is very, very important. And therefore, what should be done? What is to be done? I know I'm repeating the great political question here. What is to be done? But it is a very, very important question. The thing is that you have to understand, in some situations where you think things are just so bad that they can't get better. And I see that things can definitely get better. I'm seeing instances in which people in small clusters, in very circumscribed communities, are resisting. I am seeing more and more people becoming aware of the dichotomy that they live every day. But I also am seeing that they're looking for direction. They're looking for someone to help them understand how best to channel their energy so that it delivers better resources. It delivers better results to their communities. They're looking for enlightened leadership. And yes, people will say, well, everybody's a leader. Yes, yes, yes. No question about that. But in the end, this kind of work requires leadership. This kind of work requires a hierarchy where people understand at the top, those people who take on the responsibility for basically not just bringing together a vision, a group that shares a vision, but how to implement it. You do need logisticians. You do need people who know how to get things done. You do need soldiers. It is, in fact, a campaign. So you have to have differentiation of roles. You do have to have people with specific kinds of skills. So in that sense, you need a hierarchy of leadership, with everybody bringing something specific to the effort. But we can't sustain any more, it's hard to call them losses in a way. It's just, could we sustain any more non-successes? And if these times are so serious, and yet we can't sustain, or we can't show that we have gained ground in a specific way, I mean, what therefore is our future as agents of change in a society? So that is put up for our discussion today. After the charade, today's charade, selection day, we will have selected officials elected by the end of the day. We will have the Democratic Republican duopoly again prevailing. We will have a new set of the same type in some instances taking their place within party structures that are dangerous and injurious to our health as a people, our political, economic, and social health. What is the formula for change? How is it to be attained? And what are we prepared to do? Your questions and comments and your ideas right after this short break. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about what are we to do, what are we going to do, what can we commit to doing after today's electoral charade. Your comments and observations and opinions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. This essentially has been the question I've been broaching, you know, in dribs and drabs in the last several weeks and months, talking about getting us to re-examine our roles, respectively, in this whole process of change. And so we have come today, should be a good day of to begin this process of reflection and aggressive discussion, no holds barred, on where we are with our own communities, with their own set of contradictions, and there are many, and where we are with each other as disparate groups, but sharing the same discontent and sharing the same concern that a better society, a better approach is available, and we are the ones who should play a major role in making that transformation occur. So what are your ideas? How do we function after today? What should the conversations be about after today? And are we committed or are we just joking? Are we content to make this an idealistic and theoretical discussion? Or are we committed to rolling up our sleeves and getting serious about the matter of social and political and economic transformation, because the indicators that we are looking at suggest that we are in very, very deep trouble? Are we the ones who we've been looking for? What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. I'm not concerned about, you know, whether, you know, the Democrats would have held on to the Senate or whether the Republicans would have taken hold of the House. And I really am not, I'm not interested in all of that, because that's been going on for a while. And I'm not falling for the fear factor, which is part of the political season. in which one party tells you how awful things will get if the other party prevails. We ought to have more intelligent discussions than that. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Sharif?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know what? I think the problem is that we, as a community, have gotten basically kind of lazy on forming our own candidates in regards to political action. We talked about this a lot of times, about the community building a candidate. You know, the thing is that I would say about 3 years before the election, we should try to find somebody, you know, kind of get a group of community leaders to kind of get together and formulate some ideas or some candidates that they can get to run. So by the time election time comes, there's no question who we're going to vote for, you know. And the problem is that, you know, we get these outsiders that come into the community telling us what, you know, what's wrong with our community and what we need to do to improve it. Because the thing is that the one buzzword, especially with this Illinois gubernatorial election going on here today, it's like the one buzzword I kept hearing from each of the candidates was about jobs. You know, jobs is basically a symptom of the real issue. Jobs will not solve the majority of the issues in the black community. I mean, you can give a job to every black man in our community, and that won't stop police brutality. That won't stop drugs coming into the community, you know. And that's all they kept buzzing about was jobs, jobs, jobs. And everybody was just falling for it, hook, line, and sinker. You know, the thing is that we need to get together to kind of build our own candidate so we know, so we can implant in him or her what we want as a community. And then at that point, we'll know who we can vote for when election time comes.
Well, I hear your point loud and clear, but I also want to point out to you that you yourself gave some clues. You said people come from the outside, which means that the experience most often is that leadership is not organically grown.
Yep.
You don't have your own people that you put in place. But the question I'm going to ask you, Henry, is even if you were to have homegrown organic leadership, what is the political vehicle there that they would be involved in to get any change done? You can have a leader, a truly connected, community-minded leader, but would that serve your purpose if that leader runs in the Democratic Party?
Well, I will say this. You know, here's the thing, and maybe we can't get these homegrown organic leaders to be part of, you know, the duopoly that goes on today. So, you know, in most cases, well, I'll probably say in the case of right now, we might have to form our own political party if we're going to run our own organic leaders.
Okay. I think that's fair. Well, thank you so much for your observation from Chicago today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you doing
Hello.
Today?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. Where we are right now is not only are these elections in this country just a farce, but we're in the huge marketing campaign stage, and these people are so cynical, and so this is all just a game to them, because as long as the masses don't stand up and do something about this, they're going to keep this nonsense going. I refuse to participate in it. That's step number one. Just refuse to. And if more people do that, you know, if they get a 10% voter turnout instead of, what is it on midterms, about a 35% or something like that, if it starts going down, 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 the system will just go ahead and eliminate itself. We have a system here that's on its way out. I really think this system here is done. It's on its way out. But the new system we need in place isn't ready to be born yet. And we have not only a huge potential tragedy happening here for us on the left, but we also have a huge opportunity to get involved, get off our butts, and do something. And I, for one, am fully committed to making something happen, to doing something. I'm in communication right now with a couple of other listeners who contacted me after Friday. I put my email address out there, and we're communicating with each other, trying to see what we can do to connect and get this thing going. We really need people to get back, to get off their butts and stop talking and get involved. And I'm willing to go ahead and do that. I'm fully committed to it, because what I don't want is to wake up in 20 years from now and be in a world that's something we don't want to even imagine right now. You know, I feel it's going to be too horrible if we don't start doing something. And I wanted to thank you.
Some people would say that something is being done. I mean, you have the Green Party, you have the Independent Party, you have some independent efforts. So something of a start does exist. What do you think needs to happen with respect to harnessing the energy of these systems, apart from your point about creating your own parties and so forth? And that's, to me, a fantastic solution. But what use do you make of these parties that do exist?
Well, see, the thing is, I like the idea that Gary Null has about trying to get these people to come together and work together. The only problem with that is you got so many different personalities, and no matter if it's a Green Party candidate or Independent Party or whoever, these politicians all have one thing in common, and I mean politicians, quote unquote. There's an ego there. And so I really feel that although some of these people are really great people, I'm sure, there's a problem with getting them to really work together in the way that we need them to. But that's Gary's idea. I also like Ralph Nader's idea. I think that anyone who can see the problems and agrees that we need to do something about it, and we can get together, put our brains together. It doesn't matter where they are on the political spectrum, as long as they're willing, as long as we have the same focus in mind, and they realize the problems, and we share the same motive or whatever we're trying to get to. We don't have to agree on every little detail, but I like that idea too. So I think that not only do you have to get your own run your own candidates, get your own political parties together, as the caller before me mentioned, but we have to work together against a common enemy here. We have to. We don't have a choice. We're fighting such a huge monster here, this dual party, which is only one party, really. I mean, two heads on the same monster. It's a huge monster we have to defeat. And the electoral process is just a way of funneling people in, as you indicated earlier, funneling people into that narrow frame of thought that goes only from center right to way far crazy right. So we need to take a hold of the reins, start getting out there, getting people to understand what's going on, how we can get to a better future, a better world, funnel them our direction.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your ideas today. Thank you for your thoughts. From New York, Patricia, you on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
Here in New York on Election Day today, the top of the ticket is Andrew Cuomo for governor and the Attorney General Schneiderman. And I think I just wanted to share with my brothers and sisters in New York what I did today. I went to the polls and I voted. And for governor, I wrote in Alton H. Maddox, Jr. for governor, and I voted for Ramon Jimenez for attorney general on the Green Party line. There is no question that we must get off the Democratic and the Republican plantation. And back in 2010, we did everything that we had to do. We collected all the ballots that we needed to collect, and when election time came around, those ballots were not counted. So we can do it, and we must do it, and even if it means that we start all over again, we must communicate our dissatisfaction, our displeasure, and the fact that we will not collaborate. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Oh, the fact that we will not collaborate with them putting their feet on our necks. So I just want to share with the peer and audience in New York what I did.
Well, let me ask you, based on what you did, people would say, well, that was a throwaway thing that you just did, what you just described. That was a kind of a throwaway, considering there was no chance at all that Alton H. Maddox would actually be governor or that Ramon Jimenez would actually be attorney general, given all the predictions in terms of how the numbers will work and the fact that the Democratic Party, especially in the state of New York, has historically commanded the votes of people in the community. So what do you say about that?
You know, Utrice, my response is going to be that I am going to say I did what Adam Clayton Powell Jr. said. He said, use what's in your hand. What's in my hand is my money and my vote. I will not collaborate and participate in my own oppression. And so if Cuomo is going to win, if Schneiderman is going to win, he's going to win without my participation. I will not participate in this process.
What do you think beyond today that needs to happen at the community level?
Well, funny you should ask that question, because I was just speaking with someone else, and I cannot remember who said it, but education before legislation. I was talking to someone right after I voted, a woman, and we got into this heated discussion. It didn't start off on the election. Somehow, she asked me about apartments in the neighborhood where I went to vote. And it started with the apartment, and then we somehow got into electoral politics. And she was of the viewpoint that the Democrats were the lesser of the two evils. So clearly what is needed is mass education of our people before we can even do anything. Electoral politics doesn't matter if our people are not educated to do the right thing. So hopefully, you know, we will be able to begin to educate the masses as to what voting means and what the purpose of voting is and the significance of voting and what you're voting for.
Excellent. Thank you, Patricia, for your call today.
Thank you.
And for giving us a little bit of political instruction as to the strategic use of the vote. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Clara from Philly, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice, and hello, fellow audience. I want to talk about something in response to what you've asked that's very basic. I think that when we talk about political parties and we talk about education, all that is important. I agree with that. But at the base of it, education in what direction, for what? I mean, I think it has a lot to do with values, redefining our values, because we're so caught up in the values of this criminal, and I'm not speaking loosely, the criminal state that we live within. And to talk to criminals and expect to get something positive out of it, I think is foolhardy. I see moving within the self, then within the family, then within the community. And I've listed six things, they're very, very brief, six axioms that I'm living by, not to say that everyone else should, but people, I think, need to have their individual motivation in hand. Number one, believe in the power of the individual spirit and act accordingly. Number two, don't believe anything they say, meaning the corporate state, corporate political state, including the media. Three, put your personal health, and this should maybe should be the first. People need to be trained and educated about health. It's such a broad sphere. If we have poor health, we can't think straight. We can't. And then put a TV in front of us, we're gone. Okay, learn all we can about the truth. Prepare spiritually. This is what a lot of people don't want to hear. for the chaos of the coming collapse. What good will parties be then? And in the final end of civilization as we know it. And there's some people who are saying that we need to realize that we're all in living in hospice. I don't know if I agree with that. But we could be, because of all the threats that we are facing, war, climatic collapse, and economic, social collapse, all of this. Okay, enjoy every day to the fullest and refuse to worry about what they want us to worry about. It's usually an attempted distraction. And that's what I think, starting with oneself and building that strength. And kind of ignoring a lot of that other stuff.
I mean, it's a very good idea. I want to ask you how, in a practical approach to changing, because politics is a science, it is a method. What is the method or mechanism that you see would be worth taking a shot at?
Within the system? The only thing I see, well, the way I look at it is opting out in the most productive way we can for ourselves. And what I mean is this. You opt out, number one, when you go to the store, when you choose what store you're going to go to. You opt out when you educate yourself about your health and decide which treatments you're going to accept and what pharmaceuticals you're not going to take. You know that the gross national product includes illness. The sicker we are, the higher the gross national product. I think the political does start with the personal, and vice versa.
Okay. Well, thank you. It was a very profound, series of things that you gave us and offered today for our consideration. Thank you so much, Clara from Philly, for calling in. That brings us to the end of our program today. And I'm hoping that this particular day will serve as the beginning of reconsideration, wherever we are on the political spectrum, to reconsider our options and to recommit, as DX told us, to recommit to doing something very profound. Clara talked about starting with the self. Patricia talked about already exercising alternative choices and making that known. All these things are very, very important. Henry talked about growing organic leadership. So we have, from the callers today, we have very valid and valuable alternatives to what it is we are experiencing. But today should be a day to begin in earnest a reflection on our political situation and what it is we can and should be doing to make things better. I want to thank you so much for the genuine thoughts and ideas put forward today in this forum. And I also want to thank the callers for recognizing and always being very polite to salute the rest of the audience. Thank you so much. It is indeed a pleasure and a privilege to be in your company. Stay here. Coming up next is The Infectious Myth with David Crow. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. Sing it to the man.